Welcome to the Original Recipe Group Big Book Step Study. Broadcasting from Newcastle, PA, every Monday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Easter on Zoom.
Halfway house people, etc. But then when I grab new guys, I bring them through Big Book Step Study style, the way that I was taught. I don't think it's the best or better than, it's just the way that I did it, and it changed my life. You know, I was one of the guys that was lucky that when I was broken and busted this time, I was forced to go to a Big Book Step Study because I was in a program. My will, step three, was not to go to Big Book Step Study. My will was to go to Narcotics Anonymous, our brother, sister, cousin program. I shot my alcohol for the last 9 years. I overdosed. I got 3 DUIs. I've been arrested over a dozen times. Methadone, Suboxone. Stealing from the family and all those things. Like, my will, my best thinking was that, you know, I needed AA in like high school. I thought I was way past AA when I got sober. My sobriety date's July 2nd, 2010. Because of this process, I got 15 years of sobriety, not because of me, not because of my will. My will gets me arrested. My will gets me near death. My will hurts all the people around me. It's not my will to be here. God saved me. The 12 steps saved me. Someone in Big Book Step Study Saturday morning, Norton Original Recipe, saved me by 12-stepping me, because I would have never asked anyone in a Big Book Step Study to sponsor me. I hated it. Sit in the front. You got nothing to offer here. You can't speak, right? I had like 90 days sober when I started going to Big Book Step Study. And it was the least exciting meeting on the block. I don't know about how you guys get down in Newcastle, if it's super exciting, but like, that was not my experience. There was a lot of sobriety and a lot of knowledge, but like, it wasn't exciting. You know, I was a New Bedford rah-rah ex-con car salesman wannabe playboy. Like, I was a mess. And so the idea of sitting in the front and not being able to talk, when my ego says, I got stuff to say. I've been sober 90 days now. I've been to all the programs and all the groups, and I know all the acronyms, and I've read all the banners. You know what I'm saying? Oh, dude, looking back, it's so funny. But, you know, I was cleaning up one day. And I think this is all relevant to the third step. But I was cleaning up one day, and some dude came up to me and was like, yeah, I see what you've been doing the last couple of weeks, helping with the chairs and sweeping up. If you want to know what we really do in AA, I'd be happy to help you. And I was like, yeah, right. This dude was like straight LL Bean head to toe. I'm a hood rat. This is me 15 years sober with an MBA, right? I'm still a little hood. And he was like, a retired history professor from Mansfield, Massachusetts. Like, this was, he was 65 with 25 years sober, wicked dry 1950s humor. Like, I didn't identify with this guy on any level, would have never picked him out of 1,000 people. But thank you to him and the God in him that had him come up to me, because, dude, I was sick. I was a sick looking kid. I was arrogant and I was aggravated. I was angry. I had the angry eyes. And the thing is, I blew him off. I was like, yeah, no, dude, thanks. I appreciate you. I'll get back to you. And then I went to the other fellowship, and my will is to find a guy like me. I just want a guy like me that don't shoot dope. Like, you got the hot chick, you drive a Cadillac, you beat people up, you sell a little weed on the side. Like, I'm good with all that. Like, but if you just like don't overdose and die and steal your family's jewelry, like, that was the bar. And so, again, when the book talks about we are a crowd of people that normally would not mix, like, I was not that. I was very judgmental. I was very narrow-minded. I was a hood rat. I grew up with mostly African-American and Spanish people. I listened to rap music. I sold drugs since I was 12 years old. Like, I didn't get along with rock and roll and hipsters and purple hair people and left and right. Like, you had to be like me, talk like me. Like, the only criteria was like, you never hurt a kid and you never told on anybody. Like, so no snitching and no, you know, like, sex charges. Like, that's the depth of what I thought I needed to help me. And so one day I'm at a meeting and I see this cool guy and I go up to him, you know, scared to death. It's so awkward for a man or any human to ask for help. But especially, I think for men, we struggle with it more. And it's like, hey, bro, like, will you be my boyfriend, or whatever you say when you're approaching some dude in a meeting? And the guy said, no, he said, I got too many people right now. I'm not taking on new people. And I was so pissed. Again, God's will, not my will, because if that guy had an open roster, who knows? Like, maybe I'd be living a great dope life, or maybe I'd be dead, right? Because I don't know the future. But that dude rejected me, and I said, I'll never ask anybody to be my sponsor again. I'm never going through that again, right? And then I remembered, oh, that old LL Bean dude said he wants to be my sponsor. Like, maybe I'll circle back to him, right? And so next time I went to Original Recipe, and on top of it, his name's Dick. You know, his name's Dick, and he was kind of a dick, to be honest. I know you asked us not to use profanity, but like he was one of those kind of hard, old school AA dudes. Like, bro, sit in the front. You have nothing to offer here. If we want to know how to get arrested, we'll come talk to you. Like, that's how he talked to me. And to be honest with you, I needed that. I didn't need touchy feely hugs and kisses. Everything's going to be okay. So I needed that. I needed someone that was going to be a little rough, not intimidated by me, not impressed by me, could not be swindled by me. God's will from the rip was to put this dude in my life that was going to slap me around and get me in line, right? So that's my experience with step three before even getting to step three. So now, as a result of formally doing this work, I just did it because you told me to do it, right? I believed in step one, I'm powerless. I believed in the allergy. I believed in the insanity of the mind. I believed I couldn't stay stopped on my own power. I believed that maybe there's a power because I think a lot of you are full of shit. But you can't all be full of shit, right? So there's got to be at least a percentage of people that came to believe in a power greater than themselves and they got sober and they have a better life and they seem generally happy. And so circumstances made me willing to believe. Failing made me willing to believe. The thousands of men and women that flatly declare that their life got better when they came to believe in a power greater than, these give great evidence why one should have faith, right? And so by default, by failure, by pain, I became willing to believe that maybe. And what that looked like was praying to my best friend that died. That was the best I can do. I imagine the spirit of my friend. I believe spirit can't die. The body dies. The body's dying every day, but spirit never dies. And I could close my eyes and think of this dude and talk to him and just ask him for help. And so when I went through the mechanics of this, it was like, whatever, right? You just know you got to get to the fourth step. You got to get to the readings. You got to get to the fourth step if you want anything to happen. And none of this stuck out to me. I mean, the third step prayer might as well have been written in Pig Latin at the time, you know. But what I like about this is it says the wording was, of course, quite optional as long as we express the idea without reservation, which means if I truly surrender and I'm broken and I'm done and I'm saying, God, you take the wheel, I'll do whatever, then that is enough. I don't have to understand it. I don't have to memorize it, you know, and I just did what he told me to do. It was awkward as hell. It was in that basement at the Norton meeting. It wasn't, it was the meeting was in the basement. It was in a side room of like a little kid daycare with creepy toys and old desks. And it was like on my hands and knees, holding this dude's hand, scared to death, like someone's gonna see me. Mind you, I'm an hour from home. Nobody's gonna see me. You know what I'm saying? But I did what he told me to do. I did the third step prayer. And what I was told at that time was, I don't know what God's will is for me, right? But we can probably agree on what's not God's will for me. So for the begin for in the beginning, so I don't believe God's will is for me to steal, use drugs, drink alcoholically, right? I got three DUIs before I was 25. I had two of them before I was 21. So we can agree that lying, cheating, stealing, fighting, abusing women, selling drugs, committing crimes, at a minimum, let's agree that that's probably not God's will for me. So let's start by not doing that. And then he also said, God's will for you for right now is to just write this fourth step. That's all you got to worry about. That's God's will for you is pray in the morning, pray at night, go to as many meetings as you can, pick a meeting that you like, join it, get active, do all the other basic AA stuff that they tell us to do. But write that fourth step. And that means you're going to be writing a little bit every day, whether it's a half hour or it's 3 hours, just like keep making that pen touch the paper. And I was told to say the third step prayer every time before I wrote. And for me, my experience of anyone struggling writing, the hardest part about writing is sitting down, getting out the notebook, getting out the pen, getting out the book, making space. Because as soon as I pray and ask God for help and put that pen on paper, we go. But the problem is my mind is like the girl, the kid, the dog, got to pay the phone. I got to go to the gym. Like people in their fourth step pick up weird habits. All of a sudden they're taking a Thai cooking class. Like, bro, you don't need a new hobby, dude. Finish your fourth step. You know what I'm saying? They say people in AA in their fourth step have the most cleanest apartments. They crochet beautiful, you know, like blankets and hoodies and hats. Like, Nana, put it down, dude. Pick up the pen. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're trying to get right over here. Anyway, I digress. So I did the work. I did the work and something miraculous happened. I lost the obsession to drink and get high. And I had this overpowering desire to be a good human. I wanted to live in the will of what I believed my higher power was, which was kind and loving and helpful. I know, like, I was the guy, I was walking by a trash and someone else's trash was on the floor, and I'd pick it up and I'd throw it in the trash. I just like got so dialed in as a result of doing the rest of the steps. My spirit got lit on fire, and like it was an overwhelming, beautiful, exciting experience, right? It's hard to put into words how I went from angry, resentful, not very hopeful that this would work for me to like, oh, that was weird. Oh, that was a coincidence. Oh my God, God's working in my life. And now I have this awareness that there's some power. And thank God the connection was made. There's a correlation between my happiness and my attitude to pray in the morning, pray at night, doing the step work, writing the inventory, making amends, sponsoring. Like, I knew I wasn't feeling good because I'm smart and I'm strong. I was feeling better because of the weird things that you guys told me to do, the things that made no sense. My will was leave this program, get a job, get everything out of pawn, get my license back, get the breathalyzer, get back on the road, go reclaim what I lost. If you would ask me what I wanted, that's what I wanted. But I was broken enough to surrender my will and do what made no sense. Stay in a program, don't work, just write your fourth step, just go to meetings, pray in the morning, pray at night, read 84 to 88. And my life drastically changed, you know. But this is 15 years in, and I don't like fluffy bullshit unicorn and rainbow speakers, you know what I'm saying? Because I have not practiced this step very well at times in my recovery, okay? I know exactly what it's like to live in God's will, and I know what it's like to not live in God's will. And the last few years, I've kind of been up and down and on and off that spectrum. And I like in the big book how it says the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is that he will one day control and enjoy his drinking. You know what I think? I think the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is trying to get everyone in the play to just fall in line, right? If his arrangements would only stay put, if people would just only do as he pleased, the show would be great. Everyone, including himself, would be thrilled, right? That's where I struggle now. Now I'm a dad. If my kids would just do this and that, they'd be great and they'd have good early childhood development and they'd be successful. I'm a legitimate manager. I've been a manager or a director or supervisor of people for over a decade. So guess what? If the employees would do as I please, the show would be great. If my arrangements would only stay put, if you would follow the processes that I put in place for us to be successful, you'll be okay. And then guess what happens? The show doesn't come off very well. Then I begin to be self-pitying and resentful. And what do I do? Do I surrender to God? Sometimes. Or I may be more demanding or gracious as you know, I'm gonna try harder. I'm gonna try harder to get what I want. And then I can be the chameleon. Do I gotta sweet talk you to get what I want? Or do I gotta threaten your life to get what I want? At the end of the day, left unchecked without being in line with God's will, I'm gonna do whatever I gotta do and say whatever I gotta say to get what I want. And my experience is, I've bullied my way through life and through promotions and through acquiring things that I've wanted. And you know what? Those things have not been enjoyable. And I either didn't like them when I got them or I ended up losing them, right? The opposite is, I remember a few years back, I got to be running out of time. So, TK, give me like the little 2-minute warning in the message thing there because I feel like I'm going long already.
Will do, brother.
Thank you. I have experience, right? God's will versus Kevin's will. I'm at work and I'm trying to do well. I'm in school, I'm chipping away, I got a bachelor's, I'm working on my MBA. I have ideas and plans, and I mean well. I work for a nonprofit in behavioral health. I want to help people. I'm analyzing processes and policies and systems, and I have ideas and this and that. And so I am super employee. And what I was doing on accident, I wasn't even aware of it, was I was stepping on the toes of my fellows and they retaliated. How did I do that? By working extra hard and working overtime and off hours and doing an analysis of the company and going and looking at different departments that did not necessarily fall into my purview, I was exposing flaws or places that I thought could use improvement, which ended up making other humans look bad. And those other humans got upset and they started to push back. And now I got problems with the other departments. And I'm like, hey, what's going on here? I'm giving constructive feedback. I'm just trying to be helpful. And I had all this chaos going on at work. And when I got pissed off, I got resentful. So I started doing some inventory. I prayed, I made an amends, and I made a decision. You know what? Instead of, because I reported directly to the CEO. instead of going to the CEO with my findings, I would go to each department head and give them the respect first to let them know, hey, this is what I found. Let's come up with a solution together to improve this situation, right? Because I'm going to the CEO, he's going to VPs. VPs are crushing all the directors, and the directors are all mad at me, right? And so I finally was like, you know what, God, I'm gonna fall back. I'm gonna be a team player. I don't care about the promotion. I don't care about the raise. It's not that important. Like, I just wanna get along with people. I don't wanna be upset, and I don't wanna make other people upset. A month later, I get called in the office. Hey, Kev, we wanna give you this raise and this promotion. Right? That's my experience. When I'm not forcing and fighting and trying to make it happen, God will bless me. You know, when I'm trying to run the show and force and manipulate and shuck and jive, even though my motives are good, I believe they're good, like I can cause harm, you know? And so now current day, I have a beautiful life. I have challenges. I've messed up money in recovery. I've messed up relationships. My thing is relationships is probably where I fall out of God's will the most because I'm afraid. I'm afraid to be hurt. I'm afraid to be vulnerable, right? So now I want to do the casual thing and then people get hurt. You know, I don't believe it's God's will for me to gamble and spend money impulsively and use women as objects. But I do sometimes, you know, I'm not proud of it. I'm not co-signing it. But like when I'm off the beam a little bit, that's where I go. Thank God to the 12 steps. I don't think about drinking. I don't think about using, but I think it's important. At 15 years sober, I can quote the book. Yeah, big deal, dude. How you living? A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And what I find is that this step is where I am the most flawed or where I falter the most. I pray every morning, pray every night. I stop my day off and think about the 24 hours ahead. I review my day every night. I'm always sponsoring guys. I'm always going to meetings. I'm writing inventory, like formal, like mini four steps every year and little 10 steps here and there. I always have a service position. I show up for my kids. I never flake. I show up for my mom. I pay my bills. But guess what? I still want to run the show sometimes. I still get off the track. I still want to take a shortcut. I still, in self-centered fear, cause harm to others because I'm not trusting and relying on God in all my affairs sometimes. It's too scary, you know? And I'm not saying that as an excuse. I'm just saying that to be honest and to be vulnerable. You know, I'm still a work in progress. I still have to keep coming. I still have to ask God every day to like help me align with your will for me. And it goes back to some of those basic things. Like, I don't believe God's will is for me to lie, cheat, steal, be dishonest, right? Dishonesty can creep in. It's tax season, right? How sober are you? I remember in early recovery, this dude was a real estate guy and he made crazy money and he met this OG AA dude. And he goes, "You consider yourself an honest person?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm an honest person." He goes, "Do you lie on your taxes?" I don't know, but like it's easy to not lie in your taxes when you make, you know, 40K a year on a W-2, but start a business. Stop making real money. Get 1099s. Get cash payment. Do you claim it all? Do you fluff your expenses? Do you try to pad your expense account? And I'm not judging anybody that does, but it's dishonest. So let's be honest about it. Like, what level of dishonesty are you comfortable with in your life? And I never had that problem. Well, guess what? Now, me and my friend Jerry, who's on here, shout out to Jerry. Like, we bought a three family home, right? I started a side consulting business, which is all 1099. And guess what? I just went and sat down with my tax consultant and I had to report, you know, whatever, $25,000 in earnings that were not pre-taxed. I don't want to pay taxes on $25,000 as a single zero guy. I got two kids, but mom claims both kids. So, I find myself looking at my credit cards and like, is that an exemption? You know? And I'm literally in the midst of battling honesty, dishonesty, and God's will as we speak, right?
2 minutes, Kevin. 2 minutes,
Thank
bro.
you. Hey, that's God's will right there. I've said enough. You know what I'm saying? So here's the hit. I don't believe in being dishonest. When I fall short, I ask God for help. I will most likely be pretty honest on my taxes. I got smoked last year and paid like 9 grand because I was over honest, right? But I'm just being honest about it's tempting. It's tempting to kind of fluff some things up because I don't want to get smoked for 36% state and federal tax or whatever, you know? But here's the problem, and this will be my closing thing. If I continue to allow my will and my disease and my selfishness to use women for a distraction, be reckless with money, or be dishonest in any area of my life, it allows the disease to grow. It allows that to sneak in. And if I believe I can lie on my taxes, next thing you know, I believe I can just smoke weed. Next thing you know, I think I can drink some alcohol. And that's why, for me, I have to the best of my ability, be honest in all my affairs. And if I'm off the rails, I come back. I get honest. I do an inventory. I ask God to help me, to bring me to better things. And I have a dope life. I have two beautiful kids. I've traveled the world. I have a degree. Like, life is good. Life is beautiful. And if you're new, again, forget everything else I said. As a direct result of doing the 12 steps, I 1000% lost the desire to drink and get high. If there's nothing else that you want, that's all I wanted. I 1000% got that. I don't sell big books. I'm not getting paid to be here. Like, I swear to God, this is a life-changing experience. Only because of this experience do I have the opportunity to be honest with myself and try to become a better human. So I appreciate you guys. Thank you for letting me share.